Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is writer and performer Kat Lyons, who works mainly in the field of spoken word poetry. Kat is going on tour with her show Dry Season, an intimate, questioning and humorous show based on difficult experiences of premature menopause. Kat's debut poetry collection, Love Beneath the Nails, was published in February. Welcome to the show, Kat.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, yes. It's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. And what a great and interesting idea for a show. It's silly to say where did the inspiration come from, because I know it's been your own experiences. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with premature menopause?
Yeah, well, I thought I was going mad, actually. I was 37 and I had no idea what was happening, and I just stopped sleeping and all my concentration went and I lost all my focus and I developed paranoid anxiety. And so I just thought I was going nuts and it was really scary. Mm-hmm. And then one day I was at work and I was talking to my colleague and I was saying, oh my God, it's really hot in here. Are you hot in here? Because I'm really hot. And my colleague was in her late 50s, and she said, does it feel a little bit like you've put your head in the oven, but you are the oven? And I was like, how do you know this? You should go and talk to a doctor, because this sounds like menopause. And, wow. And I had no idea until that point, because of course, you know, there's not that, that now I think there is a bit more because of Davina's made it, you know, Davina McColl's made much more sort of waves about it publicly, but there wasn't anything really in the public sphere, and I definitely didn't think I needed to be worrying about it when I was 37. Turned out it was.
Wow. So what did the doctor say to, I mean, what kind of, if you don't mind, I'm really interested, what kind of tests are done to determine whether you're on the menopause?
Well, I'd had quite a few tests to do with like checking whether I was diabetic or checking on whether I was this, that or the other, but they'd never sort of put two and two together because of my age. And then when I came in and I said, my colleague says I'm having a hot flush, I think I might be in really early menopause, they were like, oh. And they do these things called an FSH test, which is where they check your hormone levels 6 weeks apart. And mine came back, and the doctor was like, oh yes, very well established. And I was like, okay, what happens now? And he said, oh, I don't know. I've got no idea. Actually, you're much younger than this usually happens to. So I'm going to read some leaflets about this, and here's a leaflet. You should go away and do some research.
Oh, wow. So
your 10 minutes is up. Off you go.
Oh no. So you didn't really feel any more reassured speaking to the doctor then?
No, I had no idea. But to give him his due, he was really upfront about not knowing anything. He made me a new. I came back. He said, I've done my research. I'm going to refer you to someone that does know what they're talking about. And he referred me to a specialist, which I think is sort of best practice for people who were my age or under 45, actually. Hmm. And then he really knew what he was talking about and put me on HRT, and then I stopped being quite so mad, which is good.
Oh, bless you. So in terms of the kind of pros of being going through menopause at an early age, I mean, well, you tell me, what do you, have you managed to find pros of it happening early? I mean, your periods stop, don't they? That's got to be a pro.
Yeah, well, I've got one vaguely working ovary that kind of kicks it out occasionally when it can be bothered, and the other one's totally given up the ghost. I don't have that hassle. I do have lots of attendant hassles, but I suppose the main pro has been in anything difficult that you go through, it really tests you, and you sort of learn what your priorities are and what you're made of and how you deal with things that are hard. And I think it caused me to do quite a lot of deep thinking about myself and who I am. And, you know, if all my personality is encased in this tiny little sash of gel that I put on every day to stop me going totally nuts, then who am I really? You know, quite deep philosophical questions that you really want to be considering at like 4 a.m. But, and also, of course, the show came out. I wouldn't have made this show if I hadn't have had all this material. I was, before this, I was doing spoken word nights and I was doing separate poems. And then one day I was crying in the kitchen because everything felt a bit much, you know, and my housemate came in and she was like, what's the matter? And I was like, oh, everything, it's terrible, and wailed on her. And she said, yes, 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 it's awful. It's really bad. Everything's, you know, a bit crappy, but it is Arts Council gold. You should absolutely try and get funding to write something about this because no one talks about it.
Wow. So,
and so, yeah.
So how did you go to, because obviously when you're writing a show like this, I mean, it's a mixture of, I mean, you've got a lot of humour in it, you know, it's a mixture of reality and things which, you know, really aren't funny. And obviously yeah. you've got, you know, medical stuff in there as well. And humour. I mean, how do you kind of create a balance between those things?
I think, first of all, when it's something like this, you have to write out the therapy part of it. Like the very first draft of something that's really, really awful for you will always be, you know, something that you never want an audience to read. And then the more you finesse it and the more you sort of share it with other people little bits, or you talk to other people. I did quite a lot of interviews as part of my research and development with other people who are going through menopause, and sort of brought in their stories into the little bits, and I tried it out on my housemates. And then I got in, and then I got funding and got in somebody to sort of direct me to pull it out of being what I call a pity party, so that it's not just interesting for me. That yeah. it's actually a very personal experience that has universal applications to other people's lives. Now, quite apart from the fact that, you know, half the human population goes through this at some point, it's also the ideas of aging and coming to terms with the fact that our bodies change quite often against our will is a universal experience for everyone. And so pulling little threads like that out. And then, of course, everyone, you know, especially, you know, the UK sense of humour is quite dark. We like to make jokes about, you know, things that are terrible because it's how we cope with it.
Yeah.
It becomes a shared thing of like, yeah, this is rubbish. Let's like, you know, zoom in on this and look at the rubbishness, and then we can laugh about it. And then it kind of alleviates it a bit.
Oh, absolutely. It makes
a huge shared experience, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there are obviously bad things that happen to us all, whether it's to do with health or loss or financial situation, or, you know, there's so many things that we all have to cope with and go through. Mm-hmm. And so much of it isn't funny at all. But then if we're somehow able at some point to find humour in a lot of these things, it somehow makes it that much more bearable.
Absolutely. And the isolation is one of the things that I found from talking to people was, and from my own experience, was one of the hardest things for people. And suddenly you're in a room and everyone's, you know, there's a great big slide of speculums up on the screen or something, and everyone's laughing about it because it's kind of objectively quite awful, but it's also quite, it can also be quite funny. You've got to zoom in on the weird humanness of the situation to find, you know, the bits that make you laugh, and then it doesn't feel quite so bad and you don't feel quite so on your own.
Yeah. And as you said, half of the population are going through it or have gone through it or are going to go through it. So it's a completely relatable subject. People aren't going to be watching you and listening to you going, what on earth is she talking about? What does she mean? How does that work? You know, everyone will be going, oh God, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I know. I wish I'd known more about it when I was younger, because I think I would have given my mum less of a rough time when I was a teenager, because it's pretty now that she was going through it quite herself. So
yeah. And did it really help you interviewing lots of other women about it as well, making yes. you realise that, you know, it's normal, if you like?
Absolutely. Yes. Talking to because I felt quite on my own, because all of the literature was very much like, oh, now you are approaching retirement and your children have left home and it's just you and your husband, you know. And I'm sitting there being like, well, this doesn't relate to me. I'm 37 and I'm queer and I'm on Tinder and none of this. So having to, and of course, all of my friends were a lot younger than me and none of them were going through this. So being able to talk to other people, it felt so, it just really makes you feel like you're not on your own. And then you're like, oh yeah, and this is rubbish, this insomnia, but like, actually it's quite, you know, hearing your funny stories of how awful it is. And that really gave me the spark of like, well, if I'm feeling like this and all these people are feeling like this, then maybe I should use my art to put it on stage, to put an experience that we kind of still don't really chat about much, except your best friend or something, put it up in the public space and be like, this isn't something that we need to hold as a taboo. It's actually really, really normal. And, you know, as worthy of making art about as any other human experience.
Mm. So you've already done a couple of nights of the show. How's it gone down so far?
Yeah, it's going down really well, actually. I always get people coming up afterwards and being like, oh my goodness, that could have been me. Or you never guess what my doctor said to me when I went there. And a lot of the audience is always women, but there are always a few guys, some of whom are dragged there by their partners, but some of come there on their own and they're like, wow, this is really interesting. Or, and quite a lot of younger people are like, oh, I'm definitely going to go and chat to my mum about this. And so it feels like I'm doing something useful. And, you know, when you hear people laughing and then you hear people sharing their stories afterwards, it makes you realise that you've put something out in the world that's doing some good, and that's all anyone can ask for, really.
Oh, definitely. I think it's great that you're getting some men coming along to watch it, even if they are being dragged along, as you say. But, but I think it's nice and it's important for us all to understand what's going on with each other. You know, it's all very well for men to say, well, it doesn't happen to me, so why do I need to know about it? But most men have got at least one woman in their life, whether it's their partner or their mother or their sister or their daughter. So it would be great for the men to understand more what the women are going through.
Absolutely. I mean, more human empathy can only be a good thing, I think. Like, it just opens up possibilities for connections and communications. And I think similarly to how, you know, the whole conversation around periods was very, very taboo sort of 10 years ago. And now it's much more in the open. Like, young people are finding that because it's more open, that there's less stigma attached to it. You know, I'm hoping that the menopause sort of conversation will be sort of brought by things like this, by art, like by documentaries such as Davina's, that it will be brought into the open and people will just start chatting about it like it's normal, because it is.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. And tell us about your book, Love Beneath the Nails. That came out in February, didn't it?
Yeah, so that's been published by Verve Poetry Press and it's available from them or from my website. And it's a similar narrative arc to the show, in that it talks about grief and loss of past self and then growing through change into sort of acceptance and finding the things that really, really matter in life that make it worthwhile hanging on for, you know, despite all the rubbishness. There'll be those things that really make you grip your fingers onto the rock and that's usually stuff to do with love.
Mm.
Obviously, the show is the last half of the book. So the show script is half of the book, which has been then translated to read more for the page. And then the rest of the poems are ones that were written for the book, but I do also perform as well when I do spoken word nights. So
great stuff. And it sounds great. And you also started Spitfire, which is an online spoken word event to highlight the voices and talent of older women. Tell us about that one.
Well, yeah, that came out of my project Dry Season as a whole, not just the show. As part of my research and development, like I said, I was chatting to loads of older women, and they were all so interesting, and they all talked about how they were just consistently talked over and invisibilized and made to feel like nothing they had to say was any use anymore. And then when I'd go to spoken word nights, I'd often be the oldest one there. And at the time I was like 38. And I was just like, this is very strange. There's people not having conversations with each other here. So I thought, well, if I combine quite a youth-centric art form, such as spoken word, with only older performers, then I might be able to bring the two demographics together and get people to listen to each other. So I was really lucky, in fact, that the pandemic cut out all the opportunities for spoken word artists, because I was able to get amazing people such as Joelle Taylor, who's like the T.S. Eliot Prize winner, to headline the night. And it was great. We had people from all over the country turning up. We had people from all age ranges turning up. And I think it's just really important that there's this idea, of course, that youth is valorized and seen as the epitome of what everyone should try and be, is like young and dynamic and interesting. And if you're not young, it's seen that you potentially can't be dynamic and interesting. And it's great to sort of put older women on that platform and be like, no, listen to what these people have to say, because these people have lived and they've been, and their stuff can be just as interesting and dynamic as a 25-year-old. And definitely to mix those people up. So you've got 25-year-olds listening to sort of 55, 60-year-olds, and then 65-year-olds listening to 25-year-olds. And that's where the interesting stuff is when we start talking to each other, we can create amazing stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I love the idea of a spoken word night. I've never really heard of that before. We certainly don't have them, as far as I'm aware, in Spain, I don't think. So how does it work?
So, well, it's just performance poetry. So when I write for a page, I'll do things with line breaks and with punctuation that lets the reader read the poem in a certain way, and I'll sort of control their journey through the poem like that. But when I write for the stage, I'll do the same sort of things with my tone of voice and the way my volume and the way I pause, or the way I sort of hold the audience. And it's just performance poetry. And it can be funny, it can be touching, it can be very, very autobiographical. It can be, I use loop pedals sometimes in mine. I know people that it's very much almost a comedy act, or it can be like cabaret or burlesque. And it's just, it can be whatever you like. It's just people using words to share stories, which I think is one of the very earliest things that humans have ever done with each other, is to tell stories to each other about the things that they think matter in their lives.
And it
needs no tech except a microphone and some people to listen, so it's quite good because there's often not much money in it.
Oh, it sounds brilliant though. So can people just go along and perform on the night, or do you have to schedule that you're performing on the night?
Well, it depends on the night. So a poetry slam is when you have people that apply to be part of basically a poetry competition, and then you all have 3 minutes usually, and then you do your best poem, and then the audience vote on the best poem. There's a winner. And that can be, you never know who's going to win, because then it depends entirely on the audience. Or you have spoken word nights, where I helped run one in Bristol called Raise the Bar. And we have two different sorts of nights. One that, well, we have very established headliners, who will come and do a full set in front of, 200 people, and we'll have support acts. So it's similar, like you would go to a gig, to see music. There'll be a support act and then you'll have your main act. But then we also run smaller events where people can apply to perform. And that's such a lovely mix of people. You'll have people who've never written a poem before in their life or definitely never shared it in public. And they'll get up and they'll be supported to do that. And their words will be given just as much space and value as somebody who does it for a living and is just trying out a new piece.
Mm.
And the mixture of communities, the way that experienced people or inexperienced people or different age ranges are brought together, I find is one of the most beautiful things about the spoken word scene. It can be quite a democratic scene.
Yeah. Sounds great.
It's quite fun.
I love it. Sounds
you
great.
Do it.
I need to find one. Definitely.
I'm sure there's stuff in Spain.
Yeah, I'll have to look into it. Well, in the meantime, if people want to go and see your show, it's called Dry Season. They can also get a copy of your book. It's called Love Beneath the Nails. Have you got a website that we can put people onto?
Yes, my website is catlions.co.uk, and that's KATLYONS. And if people are in Leicester or in London or in Bath, I'm going to be performing in those three places over the next couple of months. And we're just in the process of rescheduling our Brighton show. So fingers crossed that will happen. And yeah, everyone is welcome. Of course, I'm all over social media because everyone is these days, but if anyone wants to follow me, I'm Words and Weeds on Instagram.
Brilliant.
All dates.
Fantastic. It's been so lovely chatting with you, Cat Lyons. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.